Over the years, we've been lucky to have had so many write about their experiences with Santa. And while the paintings, pictures, and images have changed, one thing has remained the same. The spirit of St. Nicholas. Welcome to Chapter 2 of The Canon of Santa Claus. What you're about to hear has never been told before. You're listening to the 39th episode of Tracing the Path with Dan R. Morris. Chapter 2, The Canon of Santa Claus. Nicholas and Anya had grown into their roles as Santa and Mrs. Claus. So much so, it had been years since the names Nicholas and Anya were even uttered. They now called themselves Santa and Mrs. Claus all the time. As the years went by, their worldwide reach grew immeasurably. The season of giving was taking root in the month of December around the world. But a problem started to arise when politics and religion got involved. Prior to the politics, it was easy for Santa to deliver all the presents. He'd take some to the places that celebrated St. Nicholas Day on December 6th, and then some to the Scandinavians during the Festival of Lights on the 16th, and to the Italians during Saturnalia on the 21st, and many of the Christians who celebrated with a Christ Mass on the 25th, and the United Kingdom on Boxing Day on the 26th. But when politics and religion got involved, cultures began moving their St. Nicholas Day celebrations to December 25th. As the popularity of St. Nicholas Day was beginning to eclipse the other holidays, combining the two meant happy adults and happy children. The December 21st Yule Festival, for example, was the first to move. Then Saturnalia, and the dominoes kept falling. Santa was okay with that for sure, because he was training the world to think like St. Nicholas and let the spirit of giving dwell in hearts. He did not rightly care which day of December to do that or what to call it. It was the mindset that mattered. But logistically for Santa, this made it increasingly difficult to reach the world all in one night. Around the same time, the old holiday names were being dropped and everyone was adopting the name Christmas, the name that was given to the Christ Mass celebration, celebrating the birth of Jesus, as the day to celebrate the spirit of St. Nicholas. Even some of the places which celebrated St. Nicholas Day were now celebrating the feast of St. Nicholas on Christmas. And the terms spirit of giving and spirit of St. Nicholas, well, they were being replaced with the term Christmas spirit. Moving all the holidays to the 25th meant the surge of the Christmas spirit would occur on one day, but it also meant they'd need to develop a new method of delivering the toys and gifts to make sure they didn't let the children down. They started by trying to figure out the capacity of the sled, but with that many toys, maybe it would have to be a train, Santa thought. What else would carry that many toys? Santa initiated this quest by summoning Elf Dooley. Dooley was a curious elf who found his talents to support tinkering and repair more than making toys. He loved Nicholas's original one-horse open sleigh, which had been modified to fit two reindeer, and he himself had already been working on a new sleigh. But building the new sleigh to carry all the toys of the world and get around the globe in one night was outside Dooley's knowledge level. He actually didn't know what to do. He had heard rumors about the nearby island of misfit toys. The king there, Lion King Moonracer, had accomplished getting around the world in one night. Every night he would fly around the world looking for abandoned misfit toys and would bring them back to his island, where they would be loved. A toy is never truly happy until it is loved by a child, he would say. The problem, Dooley thought, was that Lion King Moonracer only got the amount of misfit toys that fit in his bag. That is why he went every night instead of just one night. The good news is that if flying became an option, Lion King Moonracer would probably have ideas. They did know about the Norse god Odin, who would fly with an eight-legged reindeer, but that seemed more like folklore. Santa liked the idea of flying, but his two reindeer pulling the sleigh, they didn't have wings, and the sleigh couldn't fly by itself, so he was a bit baffled as to how this would happen. Santa knew the elves had some sort of powers, but this time he needed the impossible. He needed to make the unflyable flyable. And so on Dooley's suggestion, he made his way across the coldest part of the Arctic to the island of the Misfit Toys, where he met with Lion King Moonracer. The Lion King had never seen Santa before, but he knew what he did, and he respected that. But he also had a confession he needed to say. He had been born a misfit himself, a lion with wings, and had run away from home because he had been bullied. He went so far that he found himself lost in the mountains, shivering in the snow, when a figure arrived, the Winter Warlock. The Winter Warlock had taken him in, and when he was confident enough and old enough, the Winter Warlock gave purpose to those wings. He gave Little Moonracer the ability to fly, and awarded him the title Lion King, and then sent him back to the island to be the protectorate of Misfit Toys. And because of that, he didn't have advice for Santa on flying, other than finding the Winter Warlock. And so Santa headed back to the Hidden City, where he grabbed two of his smartest elves, Dooley and Cheats, and off they flew into the mountains, to the place where the gnomes reported seeing the Winter Warlock with some regularity. At first, the Winter Warlock had actually gone to great lengths to scare Santa and his two elves, but Santa had none of that. He just pressed forward and walked directly up to the scary figure. That's when the warlock knew that scaring wasn't working, and then he worked up a smile. Lion King Moonracer was a name he hadn't heard in a long time, but it brought back good memories. Santa took time to explain what he wanted to do and his plea for help, and before you knew it, the Winter Warlock was making something special. He called it Magic Feed. While he was explaining the magic reindeer feed to Cheats and Dooley, Cheats was busy making a chart, trying to figure out the difference between distance, time, and magic feed. He was trying to determine how much magic feed they'd need, but that was an equally impossible task because he didn't quite understand what route Santa would even take to reach the world. Seeing his consternation, the warlock said, "Take as much as you'd like. You can always come back to get more." The elves went back to the Hidden City to figure out how many reindeer it would take to help Santa deliver presents by flying sleigh. Cheats was busy with paper working on an equation for the flying math of toys plus Santa plus sleigh plus weather plus reindeer. He did weigh the sleigh, which he had named Eve. It was made out of a lightweight Icelandic balsa. And then he weighed the reindeer and the bells and 10 toys to get an average. From those basic calculations, Cheats figured they'd only need 8 reindeer to fly the sleigh, which pleased Dooley quite a bit. Now he just needed 8 reindeer to test out this theory. And so Elf Dooley set out to visit his friend, Nock of Lullapat. Nock was a herder for the Laplanders, and managed a huge herd of reindeer near the lichen-rich pastures of Lullapat. Nock listened, but wasn't sure about Dooley's plan. Flying reindeer just didn't seem possible. Nevertheless, Dooley convinced him to lend 10 reindeer to Santa. Nock gave him Flossy, Glossy, Racer, Pacer, Fearless, Peerless, Ready, Steady, Feckless, and Speckless. That was more reindeer than he needed, as he still had Nicholas and Anya's Dunder and Blitzen, who didn't seem to age in the Hidden City. After a few private tests with the reindeer, Dooley understood that the magic powder feed did more than give the reindeer flying ability. It also left the reindeer with instant recognition of what they were supposed to do. Dooley was amazed, but the reindeer didn't need to be trained at all. So Dooley invited Santa to the sleigh room to introduce him to the new flying team. Santa was nervous, but Dooley assured him the reindeer would know what to do. So Santa and the reindeer took off flying. Tentatively, they flew over the hidden city. But once Santa had some confidence, they went further. Over the candy cane forest, past the area of twirly swirly gumdrops, over the ice mountains, and beyond the forest of Bursey. They even flew by beautiful Besky Dell and the kingdom of sugar plum fairies, and over the lovely area of Sombertown. When Santa saw the Rainbow River Valley next to Sombertown, he realized he hadn't visited Elfin Queen Tanta Kringle in a long time. He thought showing her his new toy would be the perfect excuse to stop by. Tanta was very excited to see the new sleigh and the flying reindeer, but she also had a great news for Santa. Earlier that month, on December 6th, unannounced, an orphan had arrived at her doorstep. She said there was something magical about him, something glowing and exciting. She had this feeling that he would surely, someday, take over Santa's job. Nicholas and Anya couldn't have been happier. They were already getting older and starting to think about leaving the legacy to another. But Nicholas had been worried about whose hands the role of Santa would land in. What if it was the wrong person? Tanta said she'd take care of the little one as her own, and named him Chris. Chris Kringle. Tanta knew he'd need to live some of his years learning to build toys with the elves and delivering gifts. When he grew up, she planned to move him to nearby Sombertown, where she hoped he would become a carpenter. Santa left with some glee in his heart. He hadn't thought much about passing on the legacy, but Tanta's words felt like a burden had been lifted. One of the rules of being Santa was he could choose a successor. Perhaps a young Chris would be it. But how would it end? What would he do, and how would the torch get passed? Having accomplished all that he did, Santa called in his most conscientious elf, Curtis. Before he would ever pass the reins on to another, he wanted to create a handbook of Santa. He wanted Curtis to write down everything a future Santa would need to know to be in the Santa role. He really didn't want to lose all the progress that had been made. For instance, he thought the job was too big for one person and wanted every Santa to be married. He wanted to make sure that only Kringles or Clauses were able to deliver the toys, two rules he had thought of to start. He didn't know if they'd thought of everything, but knew they had a few Christmases yet to get all the bugs worked out. Twenty or more years went by like a flash, and Chris Kringle had grown up to be a wonderful young man under the wing of Tanta Kringle. He even volunteered to start taking some of the elves' toys to nearby Sombertown. It is there that he met the local schoolteacher, Jessica. Together, they wandered the town, giving toys to kids, making them smile. While giving toys to some of the children near the fountain at the city center, Chris and Jessica encountered the ruler of Sombertown, Burgermeister Meisterburger. Being the kind soul that he was, Chris gave Mr. Meisterburger a yo-yo to play with. But despite enjoying the toy immensely, his lawmaker, Grimsley, reminded him that toys are outlawed in Sombertown, and he was breaking his own law by playing with them. Grimsley and Burgermeister then ordered that everyone there be arrested for playing with toys. Chris escaped to the forest, and Jessica fled back to her school. But Chris's escape wasn't the end of his troubles. In the forest, he ran into a large, scary creature, the Winter Warlock himself. Attempting to defend his forest, the Winter Warlock captured the new intruder. But when Chris gave the Warlock a toy, his mean exterior melted again into the friendly wizard Santa knew and loved. Worried about Jessica, the Winter Warlock helped Chris reunite him with her. But sadly, she had news to tell. Burgermeister Meisterburger had destroyed all the toys in the town and forced the residents to lock their doors and windows to prevent the kids from getting more toys. Chris was not going to stand for that. He decided that he would load up a sled and he would deliver toys to all the kids overnight when Burgermeister was sleeping. Upon arriving, he found all the doors locked, but he found a new way in. He'd go down the chimney and put the toys in the socks that were hanging from the mantle, the way that he had heard St. Nicholas had done long ago. But on the second night, Burgermeister was ready and captured Chris and put him in prison. Distraught, Jessica ran to the Winter Warlock to see if he could help. The Winter Warlock gave Jessica some of the magic reindeer feed, and together they flew on top of the prison and rescued Chris and escaped. Being separated was all they needed to know about their future. Chris and Jessica knew they were meant to be together. Tante Kringle was so happy to have met Jessica and found out about her love of children as well. She even called Santa to tell him that Chris and Jessica would probably soon be married. Santa's heart was warmed by the stories and by the knowledge that Chris and Jessica had Christmas spirit in their hearts already. The next day, Santa and Mrs. Claus came to visit Chris and Jessica. They sat them down and told them everything about becoming Santa and what it involved. And Santa even brought out his coat, which he remarked was quite similar to the one Tanta had made Chris to keep warm. He told Chris that once he and Jessica got married and put on the coat, they'd forever be Santa and Mrs. Claus to the world. The two got married in the forest, with the forest animals having decorated the spruce trees in silver and gold snowflakes made of straw. Santa couldn't make the Christmas Eve wedding, as he was a bit preoccupied delivering toys to the children of the world. But the Winter Warlock was there. Afterward, Chris told Santa that he was still wanted by Burgermeister Meisterburger, and told him that he would need to move away from Sombertown. Santa agreed and told Chris they would be living in the Hidden City, but suggested it might be the right time to move the home away, as the elves needed more space to grow. Santa suggested they take some elves and head up to Corvo Tintori Mountain and build a new Christmas town there, a place they could forever grow and prosper. And he'd stay back in the Hidden City and retire. To stay warm, Chris put on Santa's coat, with Jessica by his side, and made his way north, thus completing the first Santa transition. Chris was so excited to take on the role of Santa Claus. What he really wanted to do was work on growing the spirit of St. Nicholas. He felt there wasn't as much need to grow the territory anymore, but cementing the spirit of St. Nicholas in the hearts of children would have long-lasting effects. After his Burgermeister experience, he didn't want any other towns to experience such sadness at the hands of someone who didn't like toys. And he had a brilliant idea. What would happen if he brought the kids to Christmastown and let them help make toys so they could get a piece of the spirit? In his heart, he thought the best way to grow spirit was to bring kids each Christmas so they could get to see the sights, smell the smells, visit with the elves, help make toys, and meet Santa Claus. And when they went home, they would tell everyone of their adventure, and the spirit of St. Nicholas would grow even more. Chris thought if he could make this happen, no one would grow up to be like Burgermeister. Santa was so excited, he invited old Nicholas to see what he thought about it. Nicholas chuckled at Chris's zeal, but had a few things to tell him. He asked if Elf Curtis could go grab the Handbook of Santa. he realized a few things needed to be updated and explained. First of all, he said, elves originally built the Hidden City because not everyone in the world was good, and keeping the operation hidden was going to be pretty important. That secrecy would need to remain. The children of the world depended on him, so they needed to protect the place. And secondly, only the elves could make toys. Whether shoes, cookies, or toys, the elves were the finest makers in the world. Children would never be able to make them as good as elves. And so Curtis showed Santa these rules in the handbook. But Santa was not deterred. He knew there would be a way to bring the kids without sacrificing the security of the operation. There had to be a way. So he decided to get advice from some of the friends of Santa, and headed out on a grand trip. His first stop? The Winter Warlock. But he had no real ideas this time. Second, Tante Kringle, who also didn't have any ideas. Third was an old friend, Herr Drosselmeyer, who had the ability to bring toys to life, but in this realm he also had no ideas. But surprisingly, Lion King Moonracer had a most intriguing one. Moonracer had a cousin named Aslan in Narnia, who had created a magic train that departed from a magic train portal in London, England. And it was rumored that Aslan's magic train wasn't the only one to leave from King's Cross Station in London. And so Santa formulated an idea, a magic train. On the way home from his grand getting advice tour, his idea became crystal clear when he met a little girl in person. Flying over New York in the United States, Santa thought he had spotted a cotton-headed ninny muggins in trouble on the ground. But upon closer inspection, he realized it was a rabbit trying to get Santa's attention. Oh, how that made him chuckle. After Santa landed, the rabbit guided him over to a greenhouse, where a young girl was crying next to a large puddle of water. The little girl told him a mean man named Hinkle had trapped her and her friend Frosty in the greenhouse in an attempt to retrieve a magic hat. Santa quickly defused the situation, took Hinkle aside, and had a chat. Having grown up in a small village and dealing with Burgermeister Meisterburger and the Winter Warlock, he was well aware of personalities like Hinkle. Just as he did with Burgermeister and the Warlock, Santa used the power of toys to turn Hinkle around. And just being in Santa's presence improved Karen's spirit. He quickly helped bring Frosty back to life, invited him to come live at the North Pole with the elves, so he wouldn't melt again. Then he piled them all into the sled and took little Karen home. On the way back to Christmastown, Santa had a lot to think about. Karen's reaction to meeting Santa really encouraged him and his train idea. He knew she would never grow up to be like Hinkle or Burgermeister. She would now have the spirit of Christmas forever in her. From one meeting. The magic train. That would be Santa's next goal. But before we get to Chapter 3, let's look at some of the history that hit the cutting room floor. Historically, there was a great debate and consternation over St. Nicholas Day. Influential Christians thought it was becoming more popular than the Christmas celebration of Jesus, and looked for ways to bring attention back to that day. Martin Luther's Protestants didn't follow Catholic and Orthodox saints like St. Nicholas, but he didn't want to deny the season of giving, so he created Christkind and moved present giving to December 25th together with Christmas. The elves. Elves are known for three things. Santa's elves make toys. The Keebler elves make cookies. And in the Brothers Grimm story, The Elves and the Shoemaker, the elves would make the world's greatest shoes. In the 1985 movie, The Santa Claus, Dooley is the elf that Santa leans on most. And in The Exciting Exploits of an Effervescent Elf by Tricia Sugarek. Cheats is the smartest elf. In Tim Allen's Santa Claus 2, Santa calls on Elf Curtis to help update and manage the Handbook of Santa. And finally, in Ogden Nash's 1957 poem, The Christmas That Almost Wasn't, Nock was a herder from Lillipat. The Reindeer. In The Adventures of Christmas by L. Frank Baum, yes, the Wizard of Oz author, he identified Racer, Pacer, Feckless, Speckless, and the others as the first 10 reindeer of Santa Claus. And in Finland, the Laplander natives herd reindeer as a career, like cowboys manage cattle. And their number one food source so far north is lichen. In Santa Claus is Coming to Town, the Winter Warlock gives Kris Kringle magic feed to help the reindeer fly. The Sleigh. In Arthur Christmas, Arthur dusts off the original sleigh of Santa and shows that it was originally made of Icelandic balsa. Arthur Christmas is also the one who taught us only Kringles and Clauses can deliver toys. And the one-horse open sleigh, well, you know where that comes from. The Locations. In the movie Elf, Buddy walks through the candy cane forest and past the area of twirly swirly gumdrops. Rudolph travels to the Ice Mountains with Yukon Cornelius. Most of Europe believes Santa's workshop is hidden on Corvatatory Mountain in the Arctic Circle. And we find the forests of Bursey in L. Frank Baum's book, The Adventure of Christmas. Santa Claus Coming to Town takes place in Sombertown and Rainbow Valley, where we meet Tante Kringle. And on the box of Keebler cookies, we find the Keebler elves live in Besky Delves. The only elves that don't live in the north are the ones J.R.R. Tolkien reports that are assigned to Middle Earth. Finally, in 1510 in Riga, Latvia, the first Christmas trees were decorated with snowflakes made of straw, just like Chris and Jessica's wedding. After red and green, silver and gold are the most common Christmas colors. In Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Sam's the Snowman sings Silver and Gold. You've been listening to Chapter 2 of The Canon of Santa Claus. Stay tuned for Chapter 3. And welcome to the 39th episode of Tracing the Path with Dan R. Morris.